Welcome to another episode of the IAAF Inside Athletics podcast. I'm joined by the lovely Michelle Samet.
Oh, you're so nice.
I'm a very lovely, lovely guy. And I'm Ben Harlow. So this episode is all about the Diamond League, basically. We have the Zurich and Brussels Diamond League finals upon us already. I don't know where the year's gone, honestly.
I don't know, Benjamin. I feel like I lived on a plane this year, but it gives you a better understanding of what athletes are actually doing. I mean, we're traveling the circuit and don't have to compete. Yeah. So seeing where we are now, number 13 out of 14 in Zurich, I think everyone's a little tired, but also incredibly excited for what we've got coming up.
I know, all the athletes are now maybe starting to, well, they're like, have I actually got my peak right? Because I guess now is the time when you're probably going to, it's do or die, really. I mean, the Diamond Leagues, they are a bit of a dress rehearsal for what's going to happen. There's going to be no other time all the fields are assembled properly, like a world-class field. Like some of the finals we have coming are probably what the finals are going to be like in Doha. So it's going to be exciting. Kicking things off with Zurich, because we're in Zurich now, and it's going to be tomorrow. So, really exciting. What are you most looking forward to?
The whole thing.
Yeah. Noah Lyles and Sandy Morris's new song.
I have been singing Souvenir for the last 2 months straight, since it came out in July. I've been singing like. Hey, if you need a last minute performer for tomorrow, guys.
Yeah, you can go on backing singer.
I would love, no, I wouldn't. Let's just save that for everyone. No, but I think it's a great thing. Sandy obviously is vaulting tonight. At the train station, which is an exhibition event, always fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow, it's all about what's happening at the Let's See Grand, just around the corner from our hotel here.
Yeah, I went last year, and the atmosphere is just phenomenal. It's rush hour in Zurich train station, so you get loads of random passers-by, but the atmosphere is just incredible. So if anybody is ever in Zurich, or if you're listening to this and you're in Zurich, go tonight, you will not regret it. But and also, like, so many of the best vaulters are here. Sometimes they miss the street meet type stuff, but they are all here, and it's going to be an exciting competition.
And the women's pole vault has been incredibly exciting this year. We haven't had a clear standout performer this year. We've seen everyone struggle a little, some people coming into shape a little later. Mm-hmm. Alicia Newman had a fantastic competition last week in Paris, won her first Diamond League, set a Canadian record. We've seen the likes of Kat Stefanidi. She struggled at a few competitions this year for various reasons. Sandy Morris was injured at the first part of the season. Katie Najot's been consistently performing. Holly Bradshaw's had decent performances. Mm-hmm. So there's so many strong athletes in that field. And as you said, it's great because it's free to watch. And it's just a fantastic atmosphere. And it really sets us up for the big final tomorrow.
Yeah, it's exciting. I think also another person who was maybe slightly inconsistent but is now rounding quite nicely into form is Yulimar Rojas, who will be competing tomorrow night in the women's triple jump. Consistently over 15 metres.
I was going to say, she's gone over 50 metres 3 times this season, and all the other competitions outdoors she's had were in the 1480s, 1490s, so really, really consistent. Mm-hmm. And because we have seen Catherine Ibargüen pull out of the triple jump at the Pan American Games, only do the long jump and then didn't participate in Paris, I wonder whether there's maybe been a little niggle and she's just trying to save herself and make sure that she's on point for Doha, because that's really something that I was really looking forward to see those two go head to head, because they're just so excited to watch. And just like in the men's triple jump, which we'll see in Brussels next week, we have two performers that are really pushing each other on to really, really far distances.
It's a weird one. Obviously last year she had such a great season. Do you think it's an element of biting off more than she can chew? Because we've known her as a triple jumper for so long. Do you think now maybe her body just wasn't used to...
I don't know. I don't quite know what she was feeling like. As I said, I think she finished 5th in the Pan American Games, and everyone I've spoken to who went there said it was absolutely freezing in Lima. So that might have played part in it as well. But I'm just, again, seeing Yulimar Rojas there jump 14.11, and then 15.11, excuse me, and then I think 15.06 or what she jumped last week. Mm-hmm. So she's just incredibly consistent, and the conditions are great here. So I'm really excited to see what she can do.
Yeah, it will be interesting. I do hope Ibargüen is back on top form at least for Doha. And I would love to see her in the long jump as well, because she's actually competed in the high jump at the World Championships initially. She started off as a high jumper, then she went to triple jump, and it would be great if she did manage it, long jump as well.
Looking at things like we have the men's high jump here, wouldn't it be cool to have some of these guys in other events as well?
Yeah, well, Erica Kinsey is a great example of that.
Exactly. And actually, she's one of those athletes that said that specializing too early on in her career made her quit initially. Then she went off and started playing ice hockey, got really badly injured, went to America, started doing completely different events, did a bit of multi events, and then found her way back to the high jumps, performing the best she has done in God knows how many years, but also jumping personal best in the long jump. So she has, I think she has the world qualifier, or just below the world qualifier in the long jump as well. So I wonder whether she is actually going for a double in the high jump and the long jump.
Maybe she'll get an invite, and I don't know. Yeah, so that's exciting. And then also, specifically for Zurich, the men's pole vault, I think, is probably the one of the biggest talking points.
Yes. I mean, Sam Kendricks and Mondo Duplantis last week made history when each of them went over 60 meters on the
Six
same day.
meters.
Oh, Jesus Christ, to the
60.
day.
Woo!
60 meters. 60. No, it doesn't.
On the way to
Yeah, obviously.
the
No, 6 meters, excuse me. I just got a little carried away there. Went over 6 meters on the same day in different locations. So Sam Kee at 6 meters in Paris, Mondo at the Finnkampen in Sweden. And the conditions here are looking pretty good. I know people like the stadium here. And I was speaking to Sam's dad in Paris, and he said, well, for them, it was great when he obviously broke the American record at the US Championships. But he always said, for us, it's about winning titles. It's not necessarily about the height. But when you then actually see that you can clear those heights and that you do have that much space over the bar. He jumped it on a 490 pole. So he's one of those guys who really pushes himself over and doesn't need that long of a pole to actually get over it. And he cleared the 6 meters in Paris with the same pole. So for him, it's one of those things where, yes, he's won titles and he's a championship performer, but now he's also kind of tasted blood a little in getting to those heights. And I think now really also wants to chase records.
Yeah, I think the technical breakdown of the pole vault is so interesting. I think Holly Bradshaw is a great person for that on her social media. And when you change poles and the it, and how different pole vaulters do change poles, like you said, for example, Sam actually jumps off a really low pole for the height, whereas other people like Mondo and stuff have been jumping on crazy poles since they were four. So yeah, it's completely varied. But you do have the likes of Mondo, Lisek, Kendricks, amongst others. I guess Thiago as well has jumped really well in Monaco last month. It's, yeah, really exciting. And 6 meters is the new 580.
I was just about to make a jump joke about Mondo only being 6 years old now, considering stuff, but he's a little older than that. But I'm actually intrigued to see whether Piotr Lisek's actually coming because he became a dad yesterday.
What? I did
So
not know
he, there you go, some exclusive insight there for you,
that.
Benjamin. No, so he became a dad, first time dad, and I don't know whether, I mean, you clearly want to be with your family at that point as well, but I do hope he makes it here because he's been one of the best performers. Obviously, another guy to go over 6 meters this year. So I really hope he gets on that plane and bolts tomorrow because it'd just be really exciting to have all these top guys. As you said, in similar other events, it's what the World Championships is going to be like.
I mean, shades of Martin Rooney in Beijing 2015, where his wife was actually giving birth back in the UK, and he was,
It was
did
in the relay. They
he?
did the baby sign, the 4x4. Yeah. They wing the baby.
But yeah, anyway, that's going to be really exciting. And then also the women's 200 meters. What I really applaud about all the women's 200 meter runners, especially, is they are not afraid to have these matchups all throughout the season. And the lineup, similarly to Birmingham, is really, really hot, and it's going to be really exciting.
And you know what? I think you mentioned the point there that they're racing each other. I do think that in the men's event, we have seen that over the last couple of years as well. We are talking about back in the day when we used to see people only lining up against each other in the World Championships, whereas we're now being treated to this week in, week out. And as you said, I don't think it's just the women that are doing. Women have never been as bad for it as the men, but I do think the men have stepped up. And if we look at it, both, as you said, the women's 200 here and the men's 100 here, it's a really stellar lineup.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Noah Lyles goes in the men's 100 meters here. I wasn't sure whether we'd see him, obviously, because of he's only focusing on the 200.
But that's for the World Championships.
Yeah.
He's been running the 100 meters consistently on the Diamond League circuit as well. And
True.
like he won his first 100 meter race in Shanghai at the 100 meters and beat Christian Coleman at that point. So I do think, although he's only focusing on the 200 at World Championships, he's been consistently saying, I'm going to go for the double in the Diamond League. And I'm glad he is, because the fact that it's more spread out this year, it's not like it was last year where you had back-to-back finals on Friday and Saturday, or Thursday and Friday. It's different. And
yeah.
I think for him, he's been partly the face of this meet with Sandy Morris
with the
singing Souvenir. They're actually performing tomorrow night at the closing ceremony. They've been doing sound checks and studio checks the last few days. They're both really excited. I think Sandy said she's a bit nervous, but excited, nervous. Noah's just loving live. And just, he is an entertainer. And for him, I think, to go out there, he's really confident. He knows that people here recognize him now. He can go out. I think, looking at the field, he is the favorite in the 100. Although he's still working on his start, he's just got that second half speed.
He's got that extra gear, hasn't
yeah.
he? It's really exciting. Also, the men's 5K, I think, is going to be really interesting too. We've got Berega, Kajelcha, Cheptegei, Julian Wonders, local boy.
Chalimo,
Bikila.
Yeah, I mean, the thing here is, remember 2 years ago, the final that we saw here in the 5K?
Yeah.
One of the, I think downstairs I saw some postcards, some Weltklasse-themed postcards that people can take in a hotel. And it is the finish line shot of that race, because it was one of the most entertaining races of the year.
Yeah.
And as you said, I think that's definitely not one I would dare to put my money on, because it's so much can happen. It's because the points that you collected over the course of the season don't matter. It's a championship style race.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good taster ahead of what's happening in Doha. And I'm really excited for it, because you said, like, you have the likes of Berega in there who he's got the speed. You have the more tactical guys in there. I think it's going to be really, really exciting.
Yeah, I can't wait.
And I mean, other events. Men's four hurdles. We haven't even talked about
that. Oh my god,
obviously, that.
Yeah, literally. One of the most, I think, probably along with the men's pole vault for me, is one of the most exciting things that's going to happen. The first time in the season, Carsten and Rye Benjamin are going to be facing off against each other. Throwing the likes of Yasmani Capello.
Kyra McMaster.
I mean, sadly, Samba is not here. He is slightly injured, maybe?
He's currently in Valencia training. He had a bit of a niggle early in the season. I think it's like in his the groin or hip area. So we saw him do a couple or one or two
flat
races just to maintain that racing form. But I think, yes, they've been working on that, because obviously for him it's such a big deal to be fit for Doha, as we've seen with Muntas Barshim, who had to kind of slightly rush back into fitness because he was injured last year or at the start of the season. And those are the two biggest names in Qatar. But I do think that for Samba, it is the more sensible thing to do. It's a shame not to see the three big ones race against each other this final. But it's going to be an even better treat by the time Doha comes around. Nonetheless, looking at the guys that we have here assembled, I mean, Kevin Young even came out to watch this race, because there is a strong chance his record might go, his world record.
Yeah.
But looking at the race last week in Paris, where Carsten Warholm ran his second fastest time of the year, looked really strong, maintained a 13 stride pattern the entire way through, which for him is a really big deal, because unlike the likes of Benjamin, he can't switch legs. So I think Benjamin, if he goes out really hard, he sometimes even does a 12 stride pattern to start off and then moves to 13, which Warholm can't do. So for him, it's going all out. He's doing the 13, and he's doing it all the way through. Last week, Warholm looked strong, but I'd say up until about 250, 300 meters, Kyra McMaster was still there. And I think he's finding more and more into shape as well. He's had some injury niggles here and there. So he's definitely in the mix there. And I can't wait. I'm glad that this is one of the last races of the night, just because it's going to be massively exciting.
Do you think Carsten seems a lot more disciplined this year, or he seems, I don't know, there's something about him this year which it wasn't the same last year. I don't know, he seems more...
I spoke with him. I did an interview with him a couple of weeks ago in London. Go and check it out on Spikes. It's really interesting talking about the relationship with his coach. But the nice thing that he said in that was the fact that last year he felt everyone was on his back. He had 2017, the world title, and then suddenly you had Rai running incredibly well at NCAAs, and then Samba having a good race. And he felt that everyone was kind of like, oh, Carsten, are you worried? But he equally said that it gave him a bit of a, I think he said something like they put some heavy shoes on him, meaning that they brought him back down to earth, and he needed that a little. And while he said everybody wants to win, they're also pushing each other onto those ridiculous times. And in a race like the four hurdles, where you have the stagger made up when you're starting and you have the hurdles in the way, you're almost running your own race. It's not really a tactical affair because for that it's too short. And you, depending on which lane you're in, you can't really see where the others are. Sometimes you feel them behind you. If you're on an outside lane, you have to just go for it, which I think works for him because, like we said, he just runs out that way. But it's one of those where they do push each other on. And for him, mentally, I think it's helped him to calm him down a little. And he admits that openly. And I think his coach Life is the perfect person to do that. And he does say he's brutally honest with him when he does a workout where Life feels that he hasn't given it his all. He will say and say, look, if you want to win gold in Doha, you've got to pull yourself together. And then he does the next rep and he does it properly. And that's what makes him such a strong competitor.
Yeah, that's really interesting. What one line that particularly stuck with me that kind of represented Carsten's 2018 was actually what he said last year at the Zurich Diamond League press conference. And he said that he's been thinking about Samba more than his girlfriend. And I feel like he kind of parked that. And it was like, actually, just gonna focus on me,
Yeah.
and it seems to be working.
I mean, he's broken the European record twice. And as you said, I do think it's working. And he's such an incredibly interesting character when you listen to him. And I think, yeah, he seems to have calmed down a little and he is more focused on himself. And as we said, I think, yeah, definitely working.
The women's 400 meter hurdles, another exciting event. Is that in Zurich?
It is.
It is, yeah.
We have Sydney here. We have Delilah here.
Yeah, a rematch of the US trials. Again, the US trials has a tendency to bring out some crazy performances, but like a world record.
Just a casual 52-20. I mean, no big
honestly,
deal.
honestly. I'd be really excited to see how Dalila does do, because I think when her and Sydney have raced on the circuit, I think Sydney won. She wouldn't beat her in Oslo. And then I'm not sure whether Dalila was in Monaco. But Sydney's been doing quite well on the actual circuit.
Yeah.
But Dalila did beat her at the US trials. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of shakes up. And then obviously in the lead into Doha. But the women's 400 meter hurdles in the US generally is just so strong.
I mean, you look at someone like Shamia Little, even who only, I'd say, but finished fourth in that race. She's had an incredible season on the circuit again, like won in Lausanne and stuff. And she looked fantastic in the heats and the semis. And then, like, even said herself, she messed it up in the final because she should have been on that team. There was,
Definitely.
I mean, like,
She's
Ashley Spence,
honestly.
an amazing runner, but going by what Shamir has done in the lead up to it, you would have thought she was on the team. And I wonder whether that performance at the US Champs might fuel her on here and say, look, I might not be going to Doha, or maybe she's going in the relay, actually. I don't quite know.
Good question,
But
yeah.
I wonder whether she'll go in here all guns blazing and just trying to make a point because she has it in her. I don't think she can be ruled out in regards to that.
Honestly, the US women's four hurdlers could do a really good 4x4 flat anyway. That would be an amazing team when you think
I'd love
about
to see a 4x4 hurdles.
Yeah,
just
or just
throwing
a
it out there.
4x4, an actual 4x4 hurdle. Carnage, honestly. Okay, so Brussels. We don't know the start list just yet, but we know who has the qualifications. So going in with the men's 200, we have Lyles. Can Lyles be beaten? Michael Norman is qualified. The men's 400 meters is also in Brussels, so I don't know which one Michael will go for. But he is the only one who has actually beaten Noah over 200.
True. I mean, I could see Noah do the double.
Yeah.
He looked so strong last week in Paris. I was speaking with him beforehand, and I mean, he said, yes, the track's fast and it's going to be a fast time, but coach also killed me in a workout on Tuesday. And he still ran another sub 20. what was it, 1965 or something
Yeah,
like that.
yeah, yeah.
And so for him to say I was a little tired and to run that time, I genuinely think he can do something very special both here and there next week.
I think that's really interesting, and it's something that so Laura Muir is the guest on today's episode, and it's something that we speak about a little bit, is when you're in a heavy block of training, so obviously athletes do race throughout the summer, but obviously they go through phases of going through heavy blocks of training. And she said, sometimes I'm racing on really heavy legs after being killed in training all week. And then I go out and race and people think I've kind of lost my form. And it's like, you want people to know that you haven't lost your form, but...
It's interesting because that's exactly what Jakob Ingebrigtsen said last week in Paris in the mixed zone, because he didn't run as well as anyone was expecting, still looked good.
Mm-hmm.
But he said he got into a little bit of an argument with his dad over it, because they are back up in the mountains in St. Moritz, I think.
Yeah.
And he said they'd just come off a really heavy block of training. And he said, I felt like I'm doing winter training and I'm racing this week. And I can't race on those heavy legs. And so it's really about getting it right. But equally, if you know that you have world championships coming up in 5 weeks, you do need those heavy training blocks. So it's a really, really tough balance. And it's about knowing your body and saying, okay, right, I do need that race, or I committed to that race ages ago. I don't want to let the race organizer down. I will do my best.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also going to be really, really tough.
Yeah, it's interesting that the mind games athletes have to play even with themselves, and like knowing... I guess in a way, at least if you know that there is more to come from you, that's at least some solace. But I can understand you wouldn't want the fans and the media and everybody else to think that you've kind of lost your form, when actually you're just trying to get even better for later on.
Very quickly though, I've just realised one event about Zurich that we haven't spoken about is the women's 1500, which is absolutely loaded. You've got Jenny Simpson, Constanze Klosterhalf, and Sifan Hassan, Genza Vidibaba. I mean, it's absolutely the who is who. And Sifan's obviously looked in incredible shape, got a world record to her name this year already.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Constanze Klosterhalf, and I know they train together, she's a real threat.
She is, yeah. I feel like she used to be a threat in a particular type of race where it would wind up and it would be a hard race. But now her sprint finishes are definitely improving. And similarly with the likes of Shelby Houlihan, who is more of a sprint finisher type
She's
as well.
Got a kick.
And same with Jenny Simpson.
Yeah.
Sadly, there's no Laura Muir in this one because she's had a slight niggle, and I think just saving it for the World Championships, which is a risk in itself because obviously you're not necessarily as race sharp as you'd like to be.
Yeah.
But and I think she is the Diamond League champion, the reigning Diamond League champion, isn't she? So it'll be interesting to see who actually takes her crown this year. If you were a betting woman,
which I'm not, obviously. I mean, I think it's really tough to see past Sifan. I just think looking at how she's performed, the way she's walking around, she's confident. It's very hard to see past her. I feel Jenny hasn't raced this much this year.
Mm-hmm.
She's more of a championship performer, and like she goes with the rounds and everything.
Yeah.
And I think Constanze could push her on, but I don't think she's quite at Sifan's level just yet. I mean, she's only joined her training group, like October, November last year.
Yeah.
She's still super young. She's building up a lot of strength, which beforehand she hadn't done. But I think Sifan for me.
Is Faith competing?
I think I saw her downstairs, actually.
Okay, well, yeah, she obviously won in Prefontaine again, back from pregnancy. She's Olympic and world champion. Never won to rule out. Just making up new phrases. Anyway, back to Brussels. We were talking about Norman, especially whether he'll do 200, 400.
Mm-hmm.
If he does the 400, he's got Curly to deal with, who he actually lost to at the US Trials, which I don't think anybody saw coming.
No, do you know what? It was one of those where it was a very interesting race. And I genuinely think, again, I think it's similar to what we were talking about in the men's four hurdles, is these people are pushing each other on. And it's for Curly, I think he feels like he's sometimes a bit of the underdog. Everybody was talking about Norman, what can he do? Oh my God. And then he just went out there and ran his own race and performed. So that's certainly an interesting one. One event I'm really looking forward to in Brussels is the men's shot put. And that's, again, an exhibition event on the big square. But the men's shot put's been absolutely on fire this year.
I
What, five
completely
guys over
agree.
22?
Yeah, completely. And my fave has to be Romani. Honestly, Darlan Romani, the Brazilian guy, he's just thrown so fantastically all year. And he's just kind of, he was around, obviously, he's been around for a while, but he just really elevated himself this year. And so for me, I'd put him as like the soft favourite for Doha.
Interesting. The thing that I find amazing with him is when we're at the warm-up days before the meet and like even during the meet, like when they're preparing, he's one of the few guys that when warming up runs several laps. Like you see the other guys, like they do one or two laps, like they don't have to warm up massively. But you always see him jogging around and he's just like this figure and he's got his arms close to his chest and he's like doing his laps, but like consistently. And he does a lot of like exercises that a lot of the other guys aren't doing. And it's just a completely different approach. As you say, like he's really elevated. Don't think you can ever rule out Tom Walsh. He's just, again, championship performer,
Stunningly
really
champion.
consistent through amazingly last week, first
True.
round effort. Haven't seen Ryan Crouser much these last few weeks since the
Yeah.
US champs. A dark horse for me also is Darrell Hill.
Who almost won in Zurich last year?
Well, and he won the year before. Nobody really, I mean, he was at the Olympics and stuff, but everybody was talking about the Crousers, the Walshes and stuff. And then he just went out there in one of the last round attempts in Brussels, won. So he's someone who, if necessary, can dial it up. So really, really intrigued about that. Speaking of big men, men's discus,
Yes, yeah.
Stahl versus Dacus.
Yeah, I don't, it's the men's discus is a interesting one because we haven't really seen both them have thrown have they both thrown personal bests, haven't they, this year and national records, yeah. So it's yeah, just great to see this rivalry building up and they've not been neither one has particularly dominated. I feel like the kind of head to heads are quite even. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out.
And completely different, like body shapes, if you look at them, completely different techniques. Like Fedric is really one of the speed throwers. I feel like there's a bit more weight behind Daniel Stoll. So that's something that about the throwing events I really like, because you look at them, they have different techniques in all of the events. We see it in the javelin, we see it in the shot, we see everyone has their own way of doing something and is succeeding with that. And I think that's quite an interesting, I think it's encouraging as well for anyone that is watching these events, because you don't have to, like, in a distance event, there's like mostly a certain type of body shape or whatever that you'll see performing, or even in the sprints to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Whereas there's a whole range of different
Completely.
techniques and body types, and I think that's quite interesting to follow that and to see how it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. Some techniques are a bit more risk heavy, like in the shot, you have like the
Yeah.
rotary versus like the glide and stuff. So yeah, I'm quite excited for that one.
Me too, me too. And then also the women's pole vault again, they'll face off in Brussels. And as you said, they've been kind of swapping who's the best all season. Obviously, Kat Stefanidis's been looking quite good, but then obviously, Alicia jumped really well in Paris. So I'm not really sure where that's going to go. There's obviously Sandy, who was Sandy in Paris?
She was. I'm trying to think. Did she finish third,
Yeah, I
second?
can't
I
quite
can't from
remember.
the top of my head. We've had so many competitions this year.
Yeah,
I
so
do
hard to
apologize.
remember.
But yeah, as you said, I think it's an interesting one. It's I mean, Alicia's been vaulting a lot. When she came over for Birmingham, she put her meet lineup on the on social media, and I think she had like within 3 weeks, she had like eight competitions lined up. And she's consistently been performing there. So there is other people for whom it's better when they compete less, because I mean it does take its toll on the body. She's someone who needs to ramp it up and needs to find into her groove. I think she's got new poles as well, so she needs that experience on them in order to feel comfortable with them come Doha. But yeah, it's going to be a pretty exciting event. Which Another one that I'm really excited about is the men's triple jump, because
That there's been it's kind of taken us by surprise almost in the latter half of the season. Will Clay has been like, I'm not playing second fiddle anymore.
And I think it's one of those things where we there was a bit of drama around because there wasn't that much triple jump in the Diamond League this year, and obviously certain events are going to not be in the Diamond League next year. That doesn't mean that they won't be on in the following year, but there's going to be a reduction of events. And I think the triple jumpers were or are a little worried that they might not be on the circuit. And I feel like they're really trying to make a point and say, look at us, we're an incredibly exciting event. And if you were in Paris last week, the entire home straight where that triple jump was happening, all eyes were on that. People were cheering for them while there was track races going on. And we don't see that very often. And I mean, they were rewarded with Will Clay jumped another 18 meter. It was a back and forth. They were, I think, the first few rounds, they were 1 centimeter apart. Then Will jumped a decent, I think it was like 1772. Then Christian jumped 1782. Then Will went out and jumped his over 18. And these guys have been like competing against each other and winning medals alongside each other for ages.
Was it since Daegu 2011
Oh
they
God,
both kind of
it's
got on the podium? Yeah.
way back. I mean, 2012, in Rio, 2016. There's been plenty of times, and it's good to have because they also get on. So you have that kind of moral support, but then ultimately you are competitors and you're trying to win medals. And it's going to be really exciting because I think the Christian performs best when he has someone pushing him. The amount of times he's won a medal or a title in the last round effort, he needs that. So if there is no one pushing him, he's also not doing those distances. So for him to now be in that mindset and say, I have Will pushing me all the way, I think we can see a few more 18 meter jumps this year.
Now we're going to go over to my interview with Laura Muir. I caught up with her back a while ago at the Prefontaine Classic, where she's been running really well all season. Sadly, we did say earlier, has picked up a bit of a niggle, but still, she gives a really insightful interview. And what many of you may know is that she may not know, sorry, is that she actually wasn't, she never expected to be a runner. It was just something she really fell into by accident, and she didn't even win sports day. Wasn't even the fastest kid in her school.
That is so relieving to hear. There's still hope, Benjamin.
When I was researching you, I was surprised to see that you are actually still only 26, but it feels like you've been around for so long. You've been like such a stalwart of Scottish athletics, particularly. Were you born in Glasgow or in Inverness?
Born in Inverness.
Inverness,
yeah, north,
yeah. And then did you grow up around Inverness as well?
So I was in north of Scotland for the first couple of years, and then moved down south towards like central Scotland for school and things.
Yeah.
And then when I was 18, I moved to Glasgow, and that's where I'm living now. Yeah.
Was that from a university?
Yeah, so that's to start my vet degree, yeah.
Okay, so rewinding a bit, when did you first find your love for athletics?
I think probably when I was like kind of 11, 12 years old. I would just sort of compete for the school, my primary school, in like regional cross country races.
Yeah.
And I wasn't winning them or anything, but I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine went to a local athletics club, so I just went along with her, and then it kind of built from there.
It's kind of crazy because you hear about these stories of people when they're at school and they're beating everybody by miles, and then they just kind of fall into it. But you are more of a slow burner in that respect.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't even fastest in my primary school. You know, sports
really?
Day. I wouldn't even win sports day. So, but yeah, no, it was just I just really loved the sport for what it was. You know, it wasn't because I was necessarily that good at it or very successful at it, but. Yeah, and then so I was kind of scraping into finals, you know, coming last in a few races, but I just enjoyed it for what it was, yeah.
Good, and you're also a really passionate a veterinarian as well.
Yeah.
You recently graduated. What do you prefer, doing your track stuff or do you prefer your vet stuff?
Oh, that's hard. I mean, like when I was younger, I wanted to be a vet, you know, that was
the
career I wanted to do. That's I never thought about doing, being a professional athlete. That was just a little hobby on the side, as it were. So, yeah, veterinary's always been, you know, my really big passion. And then I kind of stumbled upon running and ended up being quite good at it. So it's, it's tricky. I mean, they're both so different. You know, one's sort of the veterinary, you know, you're working with people, you know, the animals. You know, you're thinking about all your diagnoses and things like that, and then running is just, you just run, you know? So they're both very different, but I think that's what made them work really well together too.
Did you find it hard initially to juggle and find that happy medium with both of them?
Yeah, I mean, when I started off at vet school, my athletics was still a hobby, so this was when I was 18 years old. So I was doing, you know, full-time vet degree, and then the running gradually kind of got more and more and more intense. So I did first and second year uni full-time, but then we realised sort of it was getting a bit much, and third year I then did part-time and did that over 2 years, because when you start running, you know, world championships and things, it's like, oh, okay, you know, that's a lot to take on. So, but no, you know, the vet school was so supportive, and my coach Andy as well, you know, that we managed to work it out. And it took me 7 years, but I got there in the end. Yeah.
And how long have you been with Andy now?
So I started working with Andy when I was 18, so that was 2011. Yeah, okay. So almost 8 years.
Wow. Yeah. So when would you say you're like, you first realised that, okay, athletics, this actually could be a realistic option for me?
So I moved to uni in September 2011. And then by November that year, so a couple months later, I qualified for the European Cross Country Championships.
Yeah.
And the junior team, and that was my first GB camp. Literally within a space of 2 months. And I never even knew the championship existed at that point.
Really?
And Andy was like, I think you can maybe qualify for this. And I was like, what is this? I was just in my own little bubble, I had no idea. So I think when I qualified for that, and I remember Andy Bradley was on the team. And, you know, he has all these other successful runners, and you're like, wow, okay. So this is what it feels like, you know, to compete for GB, have that vest. And then there was World Juniors the next year, and I think watching London Olympics, that was amazing. You know, I was a bit too young yet to qualify for that, and but then the next year I made the World Championship.
I was going to say, you weren't far away, really. Like 2013 was a bit of a breakthrough year for you, I guess, in that respect. You went to the European Under 23s, right? And you got a medal there.
Yeah, got bronze there. Yeah.
And then World champs
over 800.
How did that how was that, because obviously you were so, super young still, first world championships in Moscow, unfamiliar environment. How was that?
It was kind of surreal, because my main aim that year, I guess, was under 23s. So I missed the British champs because under 23s was the same weekend, so got a bronze there, and I was absolutely delighted. And then I think it was a couple weekends later I ran at 800 and just managed to get the world champ standard. And then I was selected and went there, and kind of expected to bow out in the heats, but then made it through to semi-finals, you know, running a PB. And it was just so surreal kind of being on that team. And I remember like Christina Hurgu being there, I remember watching her win gold, you know, like Samo and Jess and things as well. And it was really great to kind of be in that atmosphere. And I think that is built on that year on year.
Were you nervous as well, getting to the start line?
Not really, no. I think when I was that young, I think you don't really realise what everybody's done. You just kind of bumble along in this race. I didn't know who any of my competition was, because it was all very new. So, I just kind of went out there and just did my own thing, and worked pretty well. Yeah.
So would you say you weren't really an athletics fan before you kind of fell into athletics, or...?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really remember ever watching stuff, because I mean, I would have been 11 years old when Athens was on, and I don't remember really seeing Kelly's races. I've watched them back previously, but I don't remember watching, you know, the likes of, you know, Steve Cram and Cole and things, you know, watching any of that back when I was younger. I just kind of liked the sport what it was, and didn't really appreciate kind of how big it was at the time. But I just enjoyed it purely for what it was, and not necessarily for anything else. Yeah.
Well, you really kicked on in 2014 as well. You had the Commonwealth Games were in your backyard again in Glasgow. What was that like for you?
That was pretty crazy. I think to have something you know, so close to home, not just, you know, our championships in Britain, but, you know, in Glasgow, where essentially kind of that kind of kick-started my whole athletics career. So it was it was an amazing opportunity. You know, I had lots of friends and family in the audience. You know, I was running, you know, just on places that I would, you know, run almost every day, you know, for training and things. So it was it was very surreal. It's a shame it didn't go as well as I wanted it to, you know. But at the same time, you know, it was an amazing sort of opportunity. That was my first sort of games, as it were, you know, where it was multi-sports and things. So it was, it was still a great, what's the word I'm looking for? Great experience.
I mean, at that point as well, in 2014, you also ran the 800 at the World Indoors, right?
Yeah.
So had you not really decided what kind of event you prefer at that point, or...?
Yeah, I mean, I guess at the time when I was entered for World Indoors, I was number one in the world for 800.
I know, I was going to say, so it's such a big turnaround from Moscow to indoors.
So I'd run the fastest time that year what would it have been, 2014 indoors.
Yeah.
So when you run the fastest time in the world, it's kind of like, ooh, do we do the 800 or do we do the 15? you know, in hindsight, maybe the other event would have been better, but it's because, you know, to qualify for the world final at World Indoors is so tough. You know, usually you have to win your heat to qualify, but it's you know, it's all part of the experience, all part of the learning curve. We didn't necessarily expect me to medal at that championship, so it's just a matter of gaining the experience, and I think that's what's happened these past few years. I've gained that experience now, and now I'm winning the medals.
Cool. So, taking all your experience forward, again, I feel like 2015 was another big breakthrough for you, especially outdoors, getting to the final, and then I think you came fifth in that. How was that for you?
Yeah, I was really, really pleased in 2015, because it was the first time I broke four minutes, so around 3:58 that year. And then, went on to place fifth, you know, the World Champs final behind, I think it was Sabine, I think it was two Ethiopians, a Kenyan, and then his Hassan as well. So it was a very, very strong field, and to place fifth in that, I was, you know, very, very happy. So it's, that kind of put me in that, you know, that bracket of the top few in the world, and gave me a lot of confidence going into the following year.
Did you feel any pressure after that, because you became more of a household name type thing after?
Not really, no. I think I just, I've always kind of tried not think too much about that side of things, you know, and just enjoy my sport for what it is. And I think that's where I struggled in 2014, you know, I let the pressure get to me a little bit too much. I just kind of had to reset and be like, I want to enjoy this, you know, don't sort of react to the pressure too much, just kind of take it in your stride and be more relaxed, and that's why I've done well this past few years.
Do you think that's the thing that some athletes do struggle with, maybe getting distracted by social media and that kind of thing?
I guess every athlete's different, you know, every athlete has different sort of priorities and pressures on them, but I think for me, you know, because I had my vet career as well, that's given me that other distraction. I'm not, you know, just an athlete, you know, I've got other parts to me, and I think it's important to have different identities, you know, that you're not just an athlete, and if that goes wrong, you know, something happens. But so I think you just have to, it can be a very high pressure situation and environment, but I think you just got to take it as it comes, and, you know, realise that you're in the sport because you want to enjoy it and you want to enjoy this experience.
So was lining up for the final in Beijing, is that completely just enjoyment, or was there a tint of being nervous at all in there?
I think there'll always be nerves, I mean, I think when something's important to you, you know, I think it's normal to feel nervous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I always feel nervous that little bit before races, maybe slightly more so at championships, but at the end of the day, you know, I try not to let it get over me too much, because I know if I'm relaxed then I race better. So there's nerves there, because, you know, it does mean a lot to me, but at the same time, you know, I want to enjoy the experience too.
And then going forward, 2016, I mean, 2015 was a breakthrough, but 2016, you ran so fast. You broke the British record twice, I think. And you ran, what was it, I got it on here, so you can know, 2:55. Did you ever think that you were capable of running something like that?
No. I mean, when I broke Kelly's record for the first time in the London Stadium, so around 2:57 there, and I was like so shocked at that. I think, you know, you can see the expression as I crossed the line. I was like, wow, you know, I was so happy with that. I would have happily finished the year, you know, on that time. And then to go, you know, a couple of seconds faster, you know, in Paris at the end of the year, I was like, wow, you know, because you kind of. We kind of knew from training I was running very fast, but it's one thing to do it in training and another thing to do it, you know, on the track. But very, very happy with that, and hopefully I'll PB again. I don't know if I ever will, because it's a very fast time, but I'd love to try that if I could.
I'm sure you will. You've got a lot of years ahead of you. When you are running fast in training, you can feel your body's good. Does like the idea of running fast actually on the track, does that come into your mind, or is it just purely racing to you?
I think I'll keep an eye on the clock the first couple of laps, see where you're at. You know, I think it's important to kind of know what pace you're running at, so you know kind of what you might have left for the latter half of the race. But you usually kind of pass 800, I just race, you know. And some races, it's just completely about racing. You know, in championship races, I don't think about the time at all. So it's a part of keeping an eye on the clock to see where you're at, and ultimately racing the best you can.
So if you're going pretty slow generally, the race is slow, do you just think, oh well, I can't be bothered to try and run a fast time, and then it just goes purely tactics?
I mean, if it's slow, you know, I never really go into a race saying I want to run a specific time, because 1500 goes so many different ways, and how it pans out. So for me, it's all just about kind of executing the race and running as best I can, and hopefully come away with the win, because that's all the way you want to do.
Do you have a favorite way of running the 1500 meters?
Not really. I think, you know, I used to, you know, people see me run at the front a lot of the time. So I raced well doing that. But then I also ran 3:56 coming through from the back, just, you know, in gym there. So, yeah, I've run it kind of lots of different ways. You know, sometimes it's gone really well, sometimes it's not going so well, but I think that's the sort of beauty of 1500, is it can be run so many different ways, and it makes it a little bit more exciting.
And then obviously the Olympics for that year as well, going into Rio, you were one of the fastest going in as well. How did you find the experience, just results aside, just of the games as a whole?
I loved it, yeah, you know, because it was my first Olympics. You know, I think once you've got on that team, it's like you're Olympian forever, you know, that's mm-hmm. you. So just to make that, you know, I was already doing well sort of on the circuit in terms of athletics, but I think when you make it to an Olympic team, that's something really, really special, and will be for you forever. So yeah, no, I love the whole experience, you know, just being in the village, you know, getting an Olympic kit. It was just so surreal to be in Olympics when it was never even a dream of mine to be an Olympian, so I never even contemplated that. So it was, yeah, very, very special, yeah.
Crazy. And did you have like any particular friends that you stuck around with in the village and stuff?
I get on really well, you know, with a lot of the teams. So you know, like the endurance girls, because like Laura was around, you know, Ailish, and I get on with Ailey as well, you know.
You went to the same school as Ailey,
yeah,
Dole,
same
right?
High school as Ailey, yeah.
Did
yeah,
you know so. Her well?
Unfortunately, I joined high school as she left,
okay.
We just missed each other. Yeah, but you know, she was, you know, on the name, the board, like sports champions and stuff. And mm-hmm. She was like a little legend in our town. So when I first got to meet her, I think it was 2013. I think it was maybe the first time I kind of got to meet her. We roomed together actually at the championships. So it's been really nice to get to know her well. You know, these past few years, and we're really good friends now too.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. So obviously. Going it through the Rio Olympics, you made the final, perhaps not quite the result that you wanted from it. Do you, after it, were you disappointed, or were, did you, you just gave it, were you happy because you just kind of gave it everything?
I was disappointed in that, you know, I wanted to go in there and win a medal, and I didn't do that. But at the same time, you know, I got over the race really quickly because, I went for it, you know, I wanted to try and stick with the girls at the front and give it the best shot of winning, you know, winning the gold. And and I did that. So I was proud of myself that, you know, I made that move and I covered that move. And unfortunately, you know, it didn't pan out well. But I think, I wanted to give it the best shot I could for gold and not think, you know, what if later on. So, it was hard at the time. You know, you go to the Olympics in great shape, you want to come away with a medal. But at the same time, you know, I gave it my best shot, you know, as I could. And I learned from that. And I'm using that experience now.
Do you think, like, when you are in races like that and you're like, all right, so this is my chance to kick, or do I wait, or does that go through your mind at all, or is it literally gut reactions to what's going on around you?
I think it's half and half. Yeah, half of it's you know, thinking, how am I feeling, you know, are we feeling good to go with this? And then the other half is like, you've got to make that decision, you know, very quickly, because if you even a half a second too late and they're gone. So yeah, you've got to kind of very quickly judge how you're feeling, how mm-hmm. they're looking, knowing what you're capable of and what the competition's capable of, and just trying to judge it best you can.
Well, going forward to the indoor season the next year, you really reconciled. You got double European indoor champion, 1500 meters and 3000 meters.
Yes.
And then you had that brilliant altercation with the official afterwards. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that was funny. I think it was because it was after the 1500, I think. So it was my very first sort of international senior medal and gold as well. And I just ran a British record and the championship record. So I was, you know, very, very happy. And then tried to go around the track to do my victory laps. So my very first victory lap as champion in a sense. And, yeah, I had a bit of a stoppage on the way, but luckily I managed to get round them and do my lap, yeah.
Did they say anything to you afterwards?
No, I don't think I saw her afterwards, actually, but I think they were just a little bit short in time, but I think they spent more time stopping me than it would have taken me to get on the track.
Yeah,
so.
Well, good luck catching you, I guess. So that was obviously really successful, and then going into, again, London 2017, you kind of got the opportunity to have another home championship and that kind of thing, and I feel like, especially right now, women's 1500 meters is going through such a golden era of like really tough, incredible women who are competing. And the field in London 2017 was stacked. Did you think about that at all going into it?
Not really. No, I think and the only thing you can really think about is, you know, yourself. It's the only thing you can control. So I knew a lot of the girls were in great shape, but I knew I was in a good place too. So I think you just got to, yeah, try and keep a level head and run your own race, but then expect different things to happen in the race too.
Yeah. And obviously Laura, the other Laura, Laura Waitman, was also in the race as well. And you both kind of made a lot of finals together.
Yeah.
Does that kind of give you reassurance or confidence knowing that there's another person there who you're friends with and that kind of thing?
Yeah, no, me and Laura got on really well. So yeah, she's here as well, and you know, racing at this event. So, no, it's always nice to kind of have a familiar face in the call room, and, you know, Laura's very experienced too. So, yeah, it's really nice to kind of have that someone you can chat to and things. And we're both, you know, very chilled, you know, when it comes to racing and stuff, and we get on well, so no, it's nice.
And in the call room, are you one of those athletes who likes to talk to people, or are you, like, in the zone style?
I'm a bit mixed, I guess it depends on the race. You know, when it's a big championship race, I tend to just kind of keep myself to myself, but if it's, you know, it's a smaller race, a bit more relaxed, be a bit more chatty, and then depends who's around there as well, you know, you know what things, but so I kind of judge it on the situation, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. 2018 was also like a really big year for you as well. You had another home champs with the World Indoors. You got some more medals there again. And this time it was on a world stage instead of just European. So that was another great result for you. And then heading into 2018, you actually came out as the world number one as well.
Yeah.
You won the Euros in Berlin. So that was your first outdoor title, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And how is that? You collected so many medals that year. You must have been pretty pleased with yourself.
Yeah, I was very, very happy because 2018 for me, I wasn't really too sure how I was going to go because that was, you know, I was going to be finishing my final year, and final year was very, very intense. So, yeah, you know, World Indoors, I was a bit knackered, but, you know, came away with two medals, so I was so happy with that. And then had a bit of a rocky start to season 2018, but then managed to kind of get in really good shape and run well, sort of Berlin, and then win the Diamond League title as well. So, yeah, I couldn't have wished, you know, for anything better last year. And then to have that, yeah, number one status was, pretty nice going this year too.
Yeah, you ran the 800 at the British Trials as well that year. Would you say you still haven't quite decided what your favourite event is, or...
Yeah, I mean, I know my 800 is very, very good, and I think I've not raced it that much, and I think there is potential to go quite a bit faster. So, I'd love to kind of PB this year in the 800 if I could, and the times I'm running, I'm not too far off. So I think it's always an event I think I want to stay in touch with and see how I go. Yeah.
Would you ever consider, because you did the 5K at London 2017, you ran really well there as well.
Yeah.
Would you ever consider in the middle of doing the steeplechase?
Oh, I don't think so, no.
No?
I think I'm pretty knackered as it is when I run a flat race. I would do with hurdles, yeah.
No, I just wanted, it's kind of like, almost, not the perfect distance for you,
yeah,
but it's kind
yeah.
of one of those middle
grounds. I do like 3K on the flat, it's
yeah.
nice. Yeah, yeah.
Just no barriers
no
and
barriers.
Water jumps.
Yeah, yeah.
For now, anyway, we'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, so again, you did the double again this year at the Euro Indoors, this time in your home track in Glasgow.
Yeah,
how was that?
Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, going to the championships, we weren't planning on doing two, we were just going to do the one. But then I was running so well in training, and then, you know, when you're an ambassador for the event, it's your home track, you're defending champion in both, we thought, oh, you know what, let's just give it a shot and see how it goes. And I'm so happy I delivered the double gold, and had lots of your friends and family coming along to watch. And it can be hard for them, you know, when you're all over the world, for them to come see you. So to have so many friends and family there and to deliver like I did, it was, really, really special.
And though people were going mental on social media, I think it was maybe your first gold you won, the final, like, two laps, you ran an incredible time. Do you remember the split?
I think the last 200 was maybe 28, I think.
Obviously, looking forward, you've been running really fast already this season. You ran incredibly fast. Where was it? Rome.
Rome, that's right. Yeah.
And how are you feeling right now, well, for the rest of the season?
I'm really excited, because I didn't expect to run that fast there, to be honest, because it was, you know, I'd run 4.5 the week before, so I thought, okay, if I can get close to 4 minutes, that'd be great, and then to run that time, I was like, wow. So, you know, we didn't really taper for that as such, you know, I was still in training, I'm still sort of training now, it's all about, you know, running fast later on in the year, so to run that fast, you know, off the training that I'd done that early in the season is great, because, you know, we've got a bit of wiggle room to do a bit more work, so... So yeah, it's exciting to be in that sort of shape, and I can just build on that.
as an athlete, when you are when you haven't tapered and you're just you're in training, but you do races, do you ever feel like slightly conscious that people don't realise you're in full training, so you don't want them to think that you're just running slower for no reason? Or
I guess like you know, I've had a few races where I've been a little bit off every now and again because I know I've worked really hard, but I guess at the end of the day, you know, you've got to take those hits to be in the best form you can be at the championships. And you know, me and my coach know where we're at, we know I'm in a really good place. It's just a matter of, you know, saving it, as it were, tanking it up until the big ones. So yeah, I think everybody kind of expects that, you know, you're going to have tired days and things, and but yeah, for me it's just about performing on the big stages when it matters. Yeah.
And you've got quite an exciting training group these days as well. You have Gemma Riki, who's also an up-and-coming star in British athletics, but then you also have Gabby Stafford as well, a Canadian.
Yeah.
When did she join your guys' team?
So she joined us September last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been it's been great working with her. You know, she's got a good, she's a 4-flat 1500-meter runner now, and got good, good times over the 5K too. So yeah, it's great to have, you know, another girl running that sort of times, and Gemma's pushing me in sort of the shorter stuff as well. So we're all working hard together and putting each other on.
And with obviously Doha being slightly later than usual, have you guys changed your plans in terms of how you adapt to training and that kind of thing?
I guess I started racing at a similar time as I normally would do, but we're just kind of doing training blocks and racing blocks. So I raced a bit and then gone away and trained. I'll race a little bit now over these next few weeks and then go away and train. So it's just a matter of, yeah, not losing that fitness over the summer and just building on it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we kind of started at the same time, but we're just not racing all the way through. We'll just race and train and race and train. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, so we've got a few questions from social media. So I'll do Twitter first. You've had a few from those. So from this one is from RichL80. He said, what's your favourite race you've ever run? And his favourite is one of your races from Karlsruhe when you ran 8:26 against Helen O'Beery.
Yeah, no, that was a good one. Yeah, I like that one. Yeah. That was special, actually, because that was my first European record.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like that one. But I think my favourite would probably be breaking Kelly's record first time in London, 3:57, because that was, you know, my first British record, and to have it on your home turf and run that time was really special.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, so this is from TrackFan 958, and this is, what's your favourite venue to compete in?
I think Rome's pretty special. The Rome Olympic Stadium, because you have
the warm-up track.
The warm-up track's amazing. You've got all the statues all around about it and things, and I do like Rome, actually. Rome Diamond League's nice.
This is from Reese Athletics, and it's will you do the 800 meters in Doha as well as the 1500 meters?
No, I'll just be doing one event in Doha. I think, just with it being, you know, later on the season in Tokyo next year, I'll just be one event.
Could you see yourself maybe in Tokyo doing 800, 1500 double?
I'm not sure. I don't know what the timetable's like.
Right, okay.
So I imagine I would be there for 1500. For other event, I'm not too sure. I would have to look at it because of the time, I think.
If the 1500 metres was first and that was out of the way and done, would you then consider it maybe?
I think so. I definitely keep my mind open to it. Yeah, the 1500's first, or my main event's first. You know, and the timetable works well, then, and I'm in great shape for both, and it's Olympics, and yeah, why not?
Cool, exciting times. Yeah. Right, so now I'm going to go to Instagram. You got a lot of questions on Instagram, so I'm just going to filter through. What is your favourite self-care thing to do?
Favourite what, sorry?
Self-care thing to do. I guess looking after yourself.
It's always nice to get your hair done, I think. And then go to hairdressers, get it all nice. Usually end up going for training, getting all sweaty and everything. But yeah.
Laura, you're a vet. What's your favourite animal?
I love dogs. Yeah,
cool. World record over the mile? ?
Yeah, it'd be very, very close. I think if I continued to keep going when I ran 3:55, I think I would have been pretty close. So we'll see.
Okay. What's your worst fear?
Worst fear? Oh my goodness. I've not really got any phobias or anything. I guess probably just not fulfilling your potential.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Who's your inspiration?
Oh, I think David Attenborough's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Great shout. What is a typical track session for you?
So for us, we usually do lots of reps and short recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be like 14, 15 reps, so, you know, the distance with short recovery. Yeah.
Have you got any advice for a young Scottish athlete?
Brave the weather, get tough through it, and just enjoy it and try your best, yeah.
And the final question I'll give you is, when's that 1500 metre world record coming?
I'm not sure, I won't put a date on that one yet.
Okay, well Laura, thank you so much for doing this, and best of luck at Pre, the rest of the season, Doha and beyond.
Great, thanks very much. Cool. Cheers.
Sadly, that is all we have time for on this episode of the IAAF podcast.
But if you want to follow all the live updates from Zurich, you can follow us on Twitter at IAAF.org, on Facebook at the World Athletics Club, and on Instagram at IAAF_athletics. Michelle, if people want to follow your musings, where can they find you?
Oh, they can find me everywhere. Michelle Samed, all in one word. Michelle with 2 L and E, and Samed with 2 M.
You'd be surprised how many people do spell that wrong.
People that should know better, actually.
Colleagues of many years. And then you can follow me at _BenHarlow on Twitter. That is all we have time for. Please do like, rate, comment, subscribe, review, all the things on the various channels that you could be listening on. And we'll see you probably in a few weeks' time for a Doha preview podcast. Really exciting. It's almost here. It's almost here. Months to go. So, we'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.